This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from the longtime pollster, pundit, and political consultant Dick Morris, who now is taking aim at President Obama, a man he predicted on Election Day in 2012 would lose to Mitt Romney. What's going on with the veteran Dick Morris, formerly of Fox News? Also, Dina Martin, the daughter of Dino, the king of cool. She's in Baton Rouge, and we will find out why, and she's quite a singer in her own right, and we'll talk with her about her dad's legacy and about her long-standing career in show business. And Dean Martin, the man who ruled Thursday nights for many years on NBC with the Gold Diggers. We'll find out more about his life. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, please call 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org, or you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Our guest to begin is Dick Morris, one of the most fabled and reviled and revered political pundits, pollsters, and consultants in the history of the political consulting game. He's with us, and of course, Dick, through the years, has become a prolific author with his wife, Eileen McGann. They have a new entry called Power Grab. It's not a flattering portrait of President Barack Obama. Dick Morris, good morning to you.
Well, good morning. The subtitle of the book really says it all. It says, Obama's Dangerous Plan for a one-party nation. And the concept is that we all know that Obama wants government medicine. He wants, I think, a socialized economy. I think that he wants major income redistribution. But I don't think that those are his goals. I think those are means to his end. I think the goal is a one-party country. We'll all be like California. And where there's only one party, and the other one really doesn't matter very much.
Well, California produced Arnold Schwarzenegger, Ronald Reagan, Pete Wilson.
Yeah, but no more.
Well,
it's changed fundamentally. 39% of the vote is now Latino, and it's overwhelmingly, permanently Democrat. And I think by a combination of immigration and entitlements, and coercion of the of people so they don't vote or give to the Republican Party, Obama is intent on perpetual one-party power. Let me just start, of course, with immigration. By fundamentally changing the demographics of the United States and hastening people's path to citizenship, and if they're not citizens, doing everything he can to stop efforts to combat voter fraud, by killing photo ID programs, I think that he increases dramatically the chances of permanent Democratic victory.
All right. Well, how does his approach, Dick, differ in any way from your former boss, Bill Clinton, on these issues?
Let me go through a few others, but Clinton worked very hard at stemming the tide of immigration. He built a very secure fence on the California-Mexican border that pretty much stopped that corridor and is now cited as an example of how fencing on the border would work and be effective. But, of course, it was only for part of the border. The other element that I think is important in the way Obama is trying to achieve this domination is that I do not believe that he is incompetent in running the economy. I think he's malevolent. I think his goal is to make the economy bad so that people become Democrats. The more poverty there is in the country, the more Democrats there are in the country.
Well, isn't the economy better now than it was when he took office?
Well, when he took office, median household income was $56,000. Now it's $51,000. I think that's worse. When he took office, 114 million Americans were employed in full-time jobs. Now 111 million are. I think that's worse. Of the 8 million jobs he allegedly has created in this time period, three-quarters of them have gone to immigrants, not to American citizens. And I think that
the stock market's done pretty well up until this week.
The
deficit has been decreased by half.
Relatively few have their money in the stock market, and the per capita income has crashed. That obviously is far more important.
Okay.
Let me articulate what I'm saying. I believe the reason that he's doing this is deliberately to move people from employment to entitlement. When he took office, there were 70 million Americans who got means-tested entitlements. Now that total is up to 105 million Americans. When it reaches the majority of the country, he will have a lock on a permanent Democratic majority, and that's what I think his objective is.
He's only going to be president a couple more years, though. What's in it for him?
I think that his goal is to leave a legacy of a one-party country where the left never loses political power. And I think that we also have to understand that Hillary would continue that process. And we have got to win the next election. I feel that the purpose of Obamacare, for example, is not to socialize medicine. I think it'll do that, but the goal of that is to get the middle class addicted to entitlements. You take people that are happy with their health insurance, tell them they can't have it anymore because in the Fed's judgment it's inadequate. You force them into policies that they neither want nor can afford nor need. And then you give them tax subsidies to be able to afford it. And bang, you have 10 or 15 million more people dependent on the government and willing to vote that way. I used to work in Eastern Europe a lot, or I still do, against the communist governments there. And the first thing they do when they take power as elected government is they lower the retirement age, and they deliberately try to increase the number of pensioners and dependents on the government. And like in Poland, you have a two-party system. Everybody that works for the private sector votes one way, and everybody who is either a student, a government employee, or a pensioner or unemployed votes the other way.
297-5633 is your number. Ronald in Baton Rouge, North Baton Rouge. You're on with Dick Morris. Good morning, Ronald.
Mr. Morris, it is a pleasure to speak to you, sir. I'm a political scientist at Southern University, but I got to tell you, Dick Morris, obviously you're not a good student of history. Now, Ronald Wilson Reagan signed one of the most sweeping immigration bills in this country, and you guys on the right really need to stop telling the American people of these stories. What about all the voter suppression things that have gone on across this country, Dick? Why aren't you guys telling people about how you're rigging state gerrymandered elections such that you can elect Republican majorities, Dick? Stop lying to the American people, Dick, and tell.
All right, Rhett Rinaldi in Baton Rouge.
Thank you, Ron. Now, the fact about gerrymandering is that the gerrymandering that's gone on in districts throughout the country is usually a bipartisan gerrymandering where both parties attempt to make sure that their congressmen are safe and never defeated. And that's why, and therefore, they're more worried about primary fights than they are about the general election.
But that said, the Republicans have a stranglehold on the House. Now, the Democrats may have a stranglehold on the White House, but it's going to be very hard, Dick, for a Democratic majority to emerge in the U.S. House of Representatives in the near term.
I don't really believe that. I think that if you ever had a strong Democratic wave, which you haven't had yet since the 2010 census, it would register. It's clearly more difficult, but I don't think it's impossible. But I think your basic point is right, which is that the Republicans always will have a better shot at controlling Congress than the White House. And that's why Obama has shifted massive power to the executive branch away from the legislative branch, doing stuff by executive order than the Clinton White House we clearly felt we couldn't do. Clinton issued many executive orders, about as many as Obama, but they were always very limited in scope. Like, for example, we wanted to do an executive order on gun control, and we wanted to require trigger locks on all handguns in the country. And the AG Reno said, you can't do that by executive order. That takes legislation. So what we settled for is an order that every federal employee who owned a gun who had a kid at home had to have a trigger lock. Obama does not respect those boundaries. And I think that he has loaded up the presidency with tremendous power because he believes the Republicans will never win the presidency. One other great example of this is the Electoral College. Wants to change things so that the popular vote controls the presidency, not the Electoral College. And I think that's because he knows that he has these massive voter machines in Chicago, New York, and other major Democratic cities, and that all he has to do is to give them an incentive to have them go and pull out massive numbers of votes.
All right.
Now they don't.
Well you thought he would lose. In fact, you thought the president would lose on election day.
Can I finish?
Yeah. Here you're saying a Democratic control is inevitable. And a few years ago, you thought Mitt Romney would win.
I was making the point that what Obama wants to do then is that he's encouraging states to pass a law that would circumvent the Electoral College. In other words, rather than amending the Constitution with two-thirds of Congress and three-quarters of the states, as you normally would, he's gotten 15 states, including New York and California, to pass laws saying that our state delegations, our state electors, the college, will not vote for the winner of our state's electoral vote, but vote for the winner of the national popular vote. And when he succeeds in doing that, when he finishes that, he will eliminate the Electoral College. Not by amending the Constitution, but by circumventing it.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on with Dick. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Yes, wasn't it actually Dick Cheney with his concept of unitary executive that was pushing for more White House control and less for Congress?
I think that the Cheney approach was restricted to foreign policy. And I think that in the realm of foreign affairs, it does make sense to empower the president. This one doesn't seem to know what to do with the power. But we're talking here largely about domestic issues, like health care and immigration and stuff like that, where I think that violates the spirit of the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear that the president's the commander-in-chief, and in a world of hair-trigger reactions, that gives him tremendous power. Of course, the reason we're not voting on the Iraq and Syria war is not that Obama won't submit it, but the Democrats don't want to have to cast that vote.
How do you see the election in 25 days?
Well, I think that I hope that Louisiana gets rid of Marie Landrieu and votes for Cassidy. I expect that it will, although I think in the first round, of course, Landrieu will lead, but she won't have a majority. I know Louisiana well. I handled Buddy Romer's election as governor, defeating Edwin Edwards. And I think that most likely the Republicans will win Louisiana, Arkansas, Alaska, South Dakota, Montana, and West Virginia, giving them the 6 seats they need for control. I think they'll probably pick up a 7th seat in Iowa, and they have a shot at an 8th seat in Colorado, a 9th seat in New Hampshire, and a 10th seat in North Carolina. There's the danger of losing Georgia or Kansas or South Dakota. But at this point, I think they probably won't lose any of those three.
Well, if President Obama's objective is to have Democrats control the government, based on what you're telling us, he's not doing a very good job of it.
Well, he is, because he's transferring the power to the executive branch. What does it matter what Congress passes when he can make Obamacare mean anything he wants it to? The Obamacare statute says that subsidies can only flow through state exchanges. He ignores that. He's giving it through federal exchanges. The Obamacare law specified deadlines for employer coverage and everything that he just blew through by executive action. And after the election, in fact, after the Louisiana runoff, he is going to obviously issue an executive order ending deportations. When Nixon was president, he attempted a similar power grab.
Hold on, hold tight, Dick. We're going to take a break, but the book is, of course, a provocative one, as Dick Morris's books tend to be. This one written with his wife, Eileen McGann, Power Grab, Obama's Dangerous Plan for a One-Party Nation. 297-5633 is your number, and we shall return after this 90-second pause on WRKF.
Let us leave the confusion and all this illusion behind.
This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Dick Morris, the well-known pollster, pundit, and author. And he is back with another book, Power Grab, Obama's Dangerous Plan for a One-Party Nation. Dick Morris is a man who's been around the political block for some time. Is it true you started reading the New York Times when you were eight, Dick?
Yeah, it's true, but it was to find out how Mickey Mantle was doing.
That was 1956. He was doing pretty well then.
Yep, he sure was.
Well, but when you were in your 20s, you went to work for a 31-year-old guy named Bill Clinton. That was a beautiful
right.
relationship for a while, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, for 20 years, we were very close. I remember the first time we met with each other, I went to the Arkansas governor's mansion and the Arkansas attorney general's office. He was running for governor. And at the end of this great 2-3 hour meeting that was supposed to be 15 minutes, I had to go to the bathroom, and he showed me to his personal bathroom. And I closed the door, and there was a floor-to-ceiling pinup of a blonde spilling out of a tiny white bikini. And when I went out, I said, "Do you think that's okay to have in the governor's mansion? You're in the Bible Belt here." And he said, "Don't you know who that is?" And I said, "No, sir." And he said, "Dolly Parton." And I said, "Who?" And he said, "Oh, man, you really are from New York."
Well, in the end, though, I think your last visit to the mansion, you say he punched you out.
Well, he didn't. He tackled me. He was furious. He was hot under the collar because he'd had a bad week of polling. And he tackled me and threw me to the floor, and Hillary pulled him off me. But my relationship with, I don't have a relationship with the Clintons, obviously, because I've been opposed to Hillary's candidacy, but I believe that Bill Clinton was a superb president. I think that the way you have to look at him is that he wound up and resolved the issues that had dominated the 20th century. He settled us on a permanent course of free trade and competition in the global economy, a permanent course of upgrading the schools so that we could win that competition, what would have been a permanent course of welfare reform if Obama hadn't repealed it by executive order. I used to spend hours negotiating the welfare reform bill to make sure that no president could ever do what Obama just did, which is to totally eviscerate the law by issuing an executive order. But I'm sure that it'll be reversed in the courts, but welfare reform is a casualty of Obama. But a tremendous achievement of Clinton's.
2975633, Jay in Mid City. Jay, you're on with Dick Morris.
Yes, I might think Mr. Morris and his Republican pundits have been selling fear since Obama been in the White House. President Obama haven't gotten a chance to let any of his policies or amendments come through because of the opposition that he faces from the Republican opposition. And Mr. Morris has candidly said that he wants to be a king and he wants to control the country by being the president and making this country depend on, most of the population depend upon the government, where most of the corporate leaders who are with the Republican Party are outsourcing their jobs. And yet they're sending the prices of cheap labor overseas and selling the tennis shoes over here for $150 to $200. So why those jobs can't come back to this country here?
Okay, good point. First of all, let me just say that in terms of your first point, I forget. You talked about trade, but before that, I forgot what he was saying. Do you remember, Jim?
No, he was rambling just a bit.
Okay, well, let me talk about the trade issue. Republicans blocked him. The first 2 years, he had 60 vote majorities in Congress. We haven't had a filibuster-proof one-party control of that sort since 1964. So don't say that it's a Republican opposition. He could pass anything he wanted in his first term, in the first 2 years. In terms of the trade issue, the sneakers you talked about, it is obvious that the reason that we have this problem is that China manipulates its currency. It's not allowed to put a tariff which says, if Chinese goods cost 40% less. But what they do is manipulate the currency to keep the yuan, their currency, very weak. And as a result, Chinese products undercut American products by 30 to 40%, not because of cheap labor. Transportation costs now offset labor costs, but because of artificial currency manipulation. And five times Obama has certified that China is not a currency manipulator. Clinton and Bush did the same thing. It's wrong. It's a big mistake. And the two steps that we could take to raise incomes in the United States and end this income inequality at the bottom are, number one, declare China a currency manipulator and force them to stop it and make sure that their imports are competitive. That's free trade. It's just not biasing it the other way. And restrictions on immigration so that workers in this country do not have to compete with people who are willing to work for almost nothing.
Dick Morris is the guest, and he has written another compelling book with your wife. Do you really collaborate? Do you sit down and...
I did an interview with Steve Doocy at Fox News once, and he said, how does this thing work, writing with your wife? And I said, well, Steve, a lot of people are patronizing. They think I do the writing and she does the research or something, but it's not like that. Write my half, she writes her half, and then we swap. And he said, well, does she ever say, honey, I love you, but this isn't much good? And I said, well, Steve, she skips the first part.
Well, Dick has been gracious enough to talk with yours truly and many others for many years, and I did want to go back in the archives a bit. Here was Dick Morris with me, full bloom. Buddy Romer actually was in studio as well in 1998,
right,
when Clinton was on the brink of impeachment. This was June 22nd, 1998. Frank?
Mm.
Dick Morris, 16 years ago.
Prove that it was a sexual relationship, will prove that Clinton lied about it, will prove that he committed perjury, will prove that he committed obstruction of justice, will prove that he suborned perjury, and nobody will give a damn. Because basically, the American people know that men cheat, and when they cheat, they lie about it, and when they lie about it, they get their friends to lie about it.
Dick, are you there?
Yes, yes, that was me. And I was right. I never felt that Bill Clinton should be impeached, but I never felt he was telling the truth either. And that was a unique position. All the people who liked Clinton said, oh, he's telling the truth, and all the people who hated him said, oh, he ought to be impeached. So I said, he's not telling the truth, but he shouldn't be impeached, and that's ultimately what happened.
Well, tomorrow's Bill and Hillary's 39th wedding anniversary. I'm sure you will wish them well, Dick.
Well, it's my 37th earlier in the year, and I'm delighted. By the way, my wife has a new website out called TheHillaryDaily.com, TheHillaryDaily.com, and she updates it almost every hour with new information about Hillary, so check that out.
All right, Dick Morris, we look forward to talking with you again. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we're joined in studio now by the beautiful and exquisite Dina Martin, daughter of the King of Cool, Dean Martin, who was one of the biggest stars of the 20th century. I was at Westwood Memorial Cemetery last week, by the way, and I walked. Gosh, everybody loves somebody sometime.
That's right.
What's with the pennies on the
gravestone? People, it's for good luck when people come to see him. Now, were there some fresh flowers there?
No.
Okay, good, good. Was there a martini glass?
I didn't see, not this time, but last time I was there was a cigarette and a martini glass.
Oh, it's funny. You know, that it's interesting when we were trying to figure out what to put up there for his name, you know.
Yeah.
And it just came to us. We said, well, you know, it's got to be. Everybody loves somebody sometime. Dean Martin. Yes.
And that's the song that you sing on occasion.
I certainly do. And that is actually the song that knocked the Beatles out of first place in 1964. No one could get the Beatles out of that number one spot, but Dad did with that song.
The man from Steubenville, Ohio did it.
That's right.
Now, I'm of an age where I grew up watching him Thursday nights, 9 o'clock Central, on NBC with the Gold Diggers and the Pole, and he was fabulously successful on television. He had the right approach for television, much more successful than Frank Sinatra ever was.
Yes, he was. Well, people loved Dad, you know, and he was like the uncle that you loved, and he came into Everybody's Living Room on Thursday night. That was the original must-see TV. And he just had such a nice way about him, and he would sing with everybody. And, you know, he never rehearsed. He didn't go in.
That never did a second take, right?
No, no, because it was always great the first time. And, you know, it was so cute because when he would make mistakes, they would just leave him in. You know, I mean, that was the way he was. He says, okay, you know, let's just go on. And he was just divine and beautiful.
What was in the glass?
Oh, Martinelli's apple cider. Yes. You know, he couldn't, you know, when I think about all the things he did in his life between the nightclubs and the recordings and the movies and everything that he did, he never would have had enough time. Also getting up very early mm-hmm. to go play golf every day.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't drink like that. That was his gimmick.
Well, it worked very well for him.
Yes, it did. He was a good actor.
He was a fabulous entertainer.
Yeah,
actor, singer, comedian.
Right.
He and Jerry Lewis. I'm sure you were very young when they broke up, and ultimately there was a reconciliation. How did that happen?
Yes, there was. Actually, it's when my brother Dean Paul passed away, Captain Dean Paul. And Jerry came to the funeral, but he didn't let anyone know. He just stayed in the back. It was right across the street from where my father's buried at the Veterans Cemetery. And Jerry just came quietly by himself, stood way in the back. No one even knew he was there. And then he called Dad after. And Dad said, well, why didn't you come up and say something? He said, well, I didn't want it to be about us. Didn't want it to be about me. It was about Dean Paul. And they talked for an hour on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, I mean, that was lovely. It really was. And Jerry actually wrote the foreword to my book.
And it's nice that he's still in the game and that he and your dad did have a reconciliation.
That's right, because they were the most incredible comedy team ever. I mean, just Martin and Lewis, and mm-hmm. I still to this day, I watch those films. And there's something about Jerry Lewis that just makes me laugh. You know, I mean, he is a 9-year-old boy.
He is.
Really and truly is.
He is. Well, you grew up with a Rat Pack.
I did. Uncle Frank, Uncle Sammy. It was an amazing...
Did they come to the house?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
In fact, Frank Sinatra really gave me my first singing lesson.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to sing a song on my dad's TV show. And we're standing in the wings, and I looked up, and I said, so, Uncle Frank, how do you do it? How do you get that great tone? How do you sing? He said, oh, Dean, it's all about the air. So I take in a big breath, I push from the diaphragm, and I can tell even before a note comes out if I'm going to be on pitch or not. I said, really? Does my dad do that? He says, no, your father has no idea what he's doing. He just does it. He's a natural.
Your dad died in 1995.
That's correct.
It's Christmas Day.
Christmas
right?
Day.
And he lived through the Great Depression and World War II. Served in
yes,
the
yes.
armed forces. What was his big break?
His big break, I think, was, the big break, I think, when they put him together with Jerry Lewis, you know, in Atlantic City, when they would do that, and they would do like 8 shows a day. And the crowds, it was amazing. They would go out on the boardwalk, and then they would go out into the ocean. Jerry would pretend like he was drowning. My dad would come pull him out, and then when a crowd would, you know, form around them, Dad would give him mouth-to-mouth resuscitation,
mm-hmm.
and then he'd go, oh, don't worry, folks, he's okay, come to the show tonight. And so everybody would come to the show, and I think that's really what started it all.
Well, Dino will be in concert tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, at the Belle of Baton Rouge Atrium, and there are some seats available for this fabulous lady who has a great voice, and genetically, you are blessed. Had a beautiful mother and father, so
yes.
Obviously you are an exquisite lady. So.
Well, thank you. And you have to work at it.
Yeah.
Got to exercise, eat right, have a good attitude.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you live in one of the most beautiful places in the world.
It's absolutely true. And this has been beautiful here. And also I want to say on Sunday, Saturday is my concert, but Sunday the atrium at the Bell is going to be open all day from 11 to 5. With wonderful, wonderful, there'll be pizza eating contests.
And Columbus Day Festa.
Festa, yes.
So, it is a weekend for Italian Americans, and there are a number in our state, and you're very proud of your heritage.
I'm very proud. Of course, I'll be singing Volare, and you know, that's amore. And we'll get audience participation in this, and it's going to be just a fabulous show.
It's certainly, I'm sure, fun to be the child of a celebrity, and I'm very proud of your father, who was one of the greatest entertainers of this time or any time. But there's some drawbacks too, aren't there?
You know, I haven't found drawbacks really. First of all, everybody loved Dean Martin, and so that's wonderful for me. I mean, there was one time years ago I was up for a movie. And, you know, we went to the cattle call, and then it got down to 100 people, then 10, then 5, then 2. Mm-hmm. And then she got it. And I said, how can, you know, the other person got it. I'm not going to say who got the part. I said, well, what happened? And they said, well, you didn't need the part. You know, you're Dean Martin's daughter. I thought, wait
so
a minute.
So that cost you.
Yeah. So, you know, that one did. But she is a friend of mine, and she so it's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, that's about as bad as it ever got.
You're about the same age as Tina Sinatra, right?
Yes, Tina and I. Tina is a couple weeks older than I am. A
couple weeks older.
Yes.
Did you grow up together?
We grew up together, went to Marymount together. Frankie was the same age as my sister Gail, and Nancy, same age as my sister Claudia. So we were all close. And it was, you know, the Martins and the Sinatras. Mm-hmm. We had a great time when we would get together.
Well, as I mentioned, your father was the biggest television star probably of the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And Frank Sinatra failed at television. He succeeded in a few other things in a great way. Was there a rivalry that affected the friendship at all?
No, not at all. In fact, you know, it's funny. There was something so likable about my dad, you know, and people felt comfortable with him coming into their house every Thursday night. With Frank, he was a little edgier, and so he kind of made people, you either loved him or you really didn't. You know, I mean, Frank Sinatra is the voice, the most unbelievable guy I ever met. You know, I mean, I always had a good time with him. Same thing with Judy Garland. People weren't comfortable with her when she did her TV show, and it was, I think, something about that they made...
Too hot.
Yeah, probably, you know, made people uncomfortable, but unbelievable entertainers. You know, people would go to their shows, but it wasn't a warm, cozy feeling to bring them into your house every week. I think that's what happened. But Dad and Uncle Frank just adored each other. They respected each other. They were generous with each other. And same thing with, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. They had a mutual respect, and they were all the best at what they did. And they were the three, I think, most multi-talented superstars that ever existed.
And they were together.
They were together and having fun. To watch them, I don't know if you ever were able to. I saw them at the Sands Hotel, all three of them up there together. And it was a party like you wouldn't believe. And just fun. And they, I mean, oh gosh, and they sang so great and they were funny. Oh, that's right.
What a voice.
Yes.
And we shall return with Dina Martin after this 90-second pause.
Ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, quote, ain't that a hole in a boat? My head.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online. And we're visiting with the fabulous Dina Martin, the daughter of Dean Martin. She's written about her life. Memories are made of this. Dean Martin through his daughter's eyes. And Dina Martin will be on stage tomorrow night at the Belle of Baton Rouge Atrium, 103 France Street, and she will be singing, and genetically she is blessed with a lot of her dad's gifts, and I'm sure you're quite proud to be compared with him.
Oh, I really and truly am, and I guess that's why I was named Dina, Dean with an A, but for me, the, gosh, when people come up after one of the shows, and they come up and they say, gosh, it was a great show. I loved it. I see your father in you, you know, and I'm your dad's number one fan. And it's it means so much to me to be able to bring back memories for all of these people and then make new memories for people and bringing it to all new generations. And people are just loving the music. You know, and Dean Martin was the king of cool. He really and truly was. And even as young kids, I mean, we knew that. And Elvis Presley told me that. So
yeah, there was nobody quite like your dad.
No,
Matt Helm.
Matt Helm. Oh gosh, and the camera that was a gun, or oh gosh, he was funny.
He seemed to enjoy life.
He enjoyed life, and what you saw, that's how he was. That natural and sweet and funny, mm-hmm. and he told me, he said, "Dina, you know, I work so that we can pay for you kids and I can play golf."
Mm-hmm.
You know, he loved to play golf. He was just a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Did you live in Beverly Hills?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I come to think of it, it was great living in Beverly Hills in those days. All the policemen knew us and they knew where mm-hmm. we lived. And I remember I had just gotten my first car. I was 16 and I didn't stop at the stop sign and I was pulled over. And the policeman gets up and says, "Now, Dina, you don't want me to tell your father, do you, that you ran the stop sign?" I said, "No." He said, "Okay, don't ever do it again." So, okay. You know, it was a nice little community and it was beautiful. It's different now. It's still beautiful, but it's...
How is it different?
Oh, gosh. People came from all over the world to live there. It's just, I don't know, it's you used to be able to, you know, leave your car open, mm-hmm. you know, unlocked, and, you know, we never locked our doors, and it's just the times have changed.
Yeah, I remember, I think it was, it might have been you, quoted as saying the Manson murders changed all that.
That's exactly right, and that scared us so much. It was unbelievable that those people were Charles Manson. And I had met I'd met Charlie and Charles Tex Watson and all of those people, and it was just a scary time, and things were never the same after that.
Well, if some of our listeners are in Los Angeles, and I'm sure many travel there, it is the entertainment capital of the world.
Yes, it is.
A stop that most people don't make is Westwood Memorial Cemetery, and it is a fabulous place. Your dad's not too far away from Marilyn Monroe.
That's right. That's right. And it's behind the theater. You know, it's like the AMC theater, and it's a nice place to walk through.
And you go down the street, and you can have dinner at Mateo's.
That's exactly right. You know all of this.
I know, that is
great.
I was out there, as I said, just a few days ago, and... the guy who was my waiter at Mateo's played football at LSU. He's been a waiter there for 14 years.
You're kidding.
It is a small world.
It is a small world. Oh, my gosh.
But I bet you are so heartened wherever you go, whether it's Steubenville, Ohio, or Baton Rouge, Louisiana, people all 19 years after your dad's death, they know who Dean Martin was, mm-hmm. and the fact that you're his daughter. Means a lot to them. And then when you get on the stage, it's like, wow, she's pretty good.
Yeah, that's probably the best part, you know, to be able to do this. And I was taught well and, you know, watched all of these people growing up. And I really, I try and bring that excitement that they had and that level of expertise, you know, with the great musicians and the fabulous arrangements. So it's a wonderful, it's a labor of love, but I love doing it.
Mm-hmm. Who were the singers who influenced you most?
Bobby Darin. Love Bobby Darin.
And you knew him too.
I do. Beyond the Sea, Mac the Knife. And of course, Uncle Frank and my dad, you know, that goes without saying. Rosemary Clooney. And Peggy Lee, Tony Bennett, I love, you know. So it's all the great ones.
And Tony's still doing it.
Yes, he is.
Isn't that amazing? And he is of the same vintage as your dad and Uncle Frank.
That's exactly right. And I think it's adorable that he's doing this with Lady Gaga. I mean, it's great.
It is amazing.
Yes.
297-5633 is your number, and we still have some time with the fabulous Dina Martin, who will be on stage at the Atrium in Baton Rouge at the Bell tomorrow evening, 8 o'clock. And if you'd like more information, you may call 225-293-2551. And she is also the author of Memories Are Made of This, a book about her dad, who was a dominant player on the entertainment scene for several decades, about half a century or more. Pam Bordelon has a nice feature in today's Advocate. And... she said, you told her your dad always smelled good.
Oh, my gosh. Woodhue, Fabergé. Oh, he did. I still have a little bit of it left in the bottle.
Do they still make that?
No, you know, not. It's not the original one, but there was something about when he would wear it. And I remember so well him, when I would hug him. But when he would teach me how to swing, you know, because he loved playing golf, and he would put his arms around me and say, okay, Nadina, pull back, keep your arms straight. And I could smell that Woodhue on him. Oh, it was just great. Yeah, wonderful memories.
I bet it was. I heard he was fearful of elevators. Is that right?
He didn't like small confined places. He really didn't. In fact, when he would go to the hotels, like if it was the MGM, the huge hotel, he called it the Megum. And he made sure that he was like on the second floor so he could just walk up. You know, it was, I don't know what it was. He just didn't like small little places.
But sometimes when he would go to places like New York and have meetings, he'd have to walk like 80 flights of stairs.
He would do it. He was in good shape because he would walk, playing golf every day. So it was, I don't know, he was an interesting, funny, great guy.
But both Sinatra and Dean Martin, and Sammy Davis for that matter, these great voices, and they smoked.
I
think they would not, but they did then, and they smoked a lot, and it affected them.
It did. In fact, I think they all died from emphysema, and I don't understand smoking. It's just so awful that people should try to stop. And but they would sit there, and they would drink. Not on stage, but just that lifestyle. Uh-huh. It was, staying up late. But as I say, my dad would always sneak away and go. He would go to bed.
He was a night owl.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
To the wee small hours of the morning, and Dad was really the only one that could get away from him. He wouldn't give Frank wouldn't give my dad a hard time about that, because he always wanted to get up and play golf in the morning, but. Just great, great memories and, things that I have in the book.
Well,
and
it's
being made into a movie.
It is?
Yes. Joe Mantegna is going to direct, and Bonnie Hunt is writing the screenplay, and Jennifer Love Hewitt's going to play me.
Yes. Wonderful. Who plays Dean?
We haven't found him yet.
No?
That's why it's still in the early stages. I haven't figured it out yet.
Well, I'm sure you will, but there was only one Dean Martin. It's tough.
It is tough.
Find
Those
somebody.
Are big shoes to fill.
Yeah, but he will be around in one way or another for centuries after we're gone.
Mm-hmm.
I hear Regis Philbin in his office. It's just a constant loop of Dean Martin songs.
It's true.
And his employees say they never get tired of it.
there's something about that music. Something about, first of all, Dad's voice. And all of his music didn't sound the same. Today, a lot of the artists, all the music, was that the last song I just heard? Is that the same song? But it was different, and it had, fabulous, the Great American Songbook. So it's classics with timeless music and lyrics, that you can understand and identify with. So there's just something special about them.
Now, your dad died about 8 years after your brother.
Right.
And that took a lot out of him, didn't it?
Oh, yes. That's not supposed to happen. And Dean Paul was just so amazing. What a great guy he was. And he had a new TV series that was coming out. And so it was so tough for all of us. But Dad said, you know what? He says, I've got to keep going. I've got six more children. Mm-hmm. And it was just a terrible, terrible tough time for all of us. I still can't even believe it, that he's gone.
Where were you when you found out?
I was at the Family Fitness Center. Actually, I was exercising, and they had it up on the screen. And
that's how you found out?
I found out that he was missing. I found out that the plane was missing at that time. Then I went, home and called everybody. But they didn't contact me in the beginning. I don't know how. I guess there were a lot of kids they had to call, but it was shocking.
And he was a talented and a beautiful man. He handsome, blessed, and he didn't make it to 40.
No, he didn't. And he was just... he was a good actor, a good singer. He was an incredible pilot, unbelievable tennis player. He could do it all.
He did a movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Players.
Players.
Mm-hmm.
That's with Ally McGraw.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you're bringing back more memories for me now. Yeah, that's great. Yes, he was good at everything.
And you have other siblings who are also very talented, but Is it different for a family in Beverly Hills than it is in Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
I don't think, you know, families are families, no matter where you are, where you grow up. I think, you know, you have tragedies in your life, and you have marriages and deaths and divorces, and for us, thank God, everybody, you know, comes together, you know, because there was a lot of children, that's a lot mm-hmm. of things going on, but that's what happens in everybody's life, you know, and we're all just human beings, we're all just trying to get by and, you know, make a living right. for ourselves, and that's how it goes.
Dina brought vinyl with her. I love record albums, and I'm sure you do too, and you have one, and you get to see her beautiful face and form, Destination
you.
Moon.
That's right.
Yeah. So what will you sing tomorrow night?
Oh, let's see. We'll do Volare, Destination Moon. Ain't that a kick in the head? Memories are made of this. I'm going to have audience participation. I need backup singers to volunteer and come up and sing Sweet, Sweet, the Memories You Gave to Me. So it's just a lot of wonderful music and songs. Songs off of my new album, Destination Moon. And let's see. Of course, the duet with my father. And we're going to show a video
mm-hmm.
and some of my home movies and photos. And so it's me singing True Love with my dad. And it'll be a beautiful right. part of the show.
Do we have some of Dina's music, Frank? Let's give Dina a listen before we part company with this remarkable lady.
I give to you,
and you give to me,
true love, true
love, so on and on,
it will always be
true love.
Who's that other guy singing?
Yeah, kind of a cute guy. Oh, I've enjoyed this very much.
Well, thank you, Dina.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. I'm glad you're enjoying Baton Rouge. There are a lot of good Italian restaurants in Baton Rouge. Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to Gina's tonight, Gino's tonight, and we were at Jubin's last night.
Well, keep going. There's some others before you leave, so I hope you'll sample as many as you can. And they're almost as good, maybe even better than Mateo's.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you. This has been a wonderful interview.
Well, thank you. And it's an honor. We're joined in our remaining moments by Heather Klein-Peter, who's mover and shaker in this community. And she's been involved in a major event in this community for the last few years. And this is a big weekend for you as well.
Correct. Yes, it is. It was a birthday yesterday. And then tonight is a brew at the zoo. And then Saturday, I'm officiating a friend's wedding, and then Sunday is bust.
You're officiating?
Yes.
I've done that a few times. That's nice, isn't it?
Well, I might pick your brain for some pointers, because it's definitely an exciting thing to be able to be asked to do. I'm honored. I'm excited about it.
Well, the Sunday event is your baby.
That's right.
Tell us about Sunday.
So, Bust Breast Cancer, I created it a few years ago when I was closing a lingerie boutique that I had had for 5 years. So, I, of course, had experienced women with who had gone through breast cancer and had mastectomies and, you know, all sorts of what the emotions are for all these different types of women. And so, obviously, I became empathetic. And when I was closing the store, I decided to take, you know, 40 some odd bras and donate them to artists and just ask them to do whatever they wanted with it. And I created a fashion show to display them. And it was really an awareness raiser, in my opinion, at that time. And it sold out. And so it was, then it became a fundraiser as well. And then the next year it got bigger and we sold out 3 times. And, you know, the governor's office calls up and says, can I get some tickets to Bust Breast Cancer? And so Beverly, a woman, says, man, I think we got something. So Woman's Hospital adopted it. It's the first ever third-party created event that they've adopted as a major, it's their major fundraiser now, alongside Woman's Victory Open.
And all kinds of activities and people on stage.
Yes.
Sunday night, 6 o'clock.
That's correct.
At the Renaissance. Now, for those who'd like to be there, Heather, 924-8720 is the number.
Yep.
And
www.womens.org/BBC.
And the attire is something to behold, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. For the women on stage, it certainly is something to behold. Yeah.
Well, once again, it's 225-924-8720, Bust Breast Cancer, Sunday 6 to 9 at the Renaissance on Bluebonnet.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for what you do. And we shall return Monday. For Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.